Hi, everybody, and good afternoon here from the Temple of Silence here in Finland. We are continuing with some very interesting stanzas from the old commentary. We're actually on video commentary number 22, but I just wanted to remind us that to will is the prerogative of the spirit or the monad. And let's see here how I can bring that in. To know is the function of the soul. To dare is the duty of the personality. And to be silent is the ultimate dharma or destiny of the matter aspect of the animal nature in its interplay with the soul. That sums things up very, very nicely. And we've been dealing with now the first three of seven stanzas from the old commentary. So we've covered the first three rays, and I have a feeling that maybe elsewhere I've also dealt with these to a certain extent. But we're looking here at the preservation of the detached soul consciousness and even the detached spirit consciousness. Finally, for the first ray, you know, the final little mantram is the key to many things. And for the first ray, I still persist. And for the second ray, naught is but me. And for the third ray, I am the worker and the work, the one that is. You see the detached point of view, I think, one that is expressed by an aspect of ourself which has liberated itself from identification with the lower man, and one that is actually increasingly identifying as the one. Now, who is the one? You know, obviously, that is finally the monadic nature. So there is that highest part of ourselves looking on. Of course, the soul looks on as well. It may be the consciousness within the soul doesn't see as much. The consciousness within the soul body, the causal body, the egoic lotus, doesn't see as much, but certainly sees the unity. And when we're talking about seeing the one, then certainly we're talking about a still higher aspect of ourself. So now let's go on and do, at least all I can say is offer some suggestions regarding the fourth, fifth, and sixth rays. Let the outer glory pass away and the beauty of the inner light reveal the one. This is an intuitive ray. Let dissonance give place to harmony, and from the center of the hidden light, let the soul speak. Let the words roll forth. Beauty and glory veil me not. I stand revealed. I am. Another great statement, and one applying to a ray that it is difficult to understand unless our intuition is active. So let's see if I can. There we go. Let the outer glory pass away. The fourth ray can produce this, and it can produce the beauty. But we're talking about a blend of beauty and light. So beauty and inner light, as if a blend of the fourth ray and the second ray. The light pertains particularly to the second ray and sometimes to the third ray as well. So, you know, it's very common that the fourth ray type will be captivated by the beauty either created or the beauty surrounding. It's like listening to the sirens sing. You know, you can be lured into a fatal trap by beholding the beauty of the world and then becoming captivated by it. The Gandharvas sing, and we are captivated. But Master Maurya says, interestingly enough, he says, with beauty thou hast the light. So the relation of beauty and light is enunciated by him, and it is also true that the light of unity is revealed when we can truly appreciate beauty. As long as we can remain eventually detached from all combinations and not be lured off the track by even our high-level attachments. So there is an outer glory, and the fourth ray certainly contributes to its appearance. And let the beauty of the inner light, and we presume, in a way, the light of the soul, the beauty of the inner light, reveal the one. So behind all the factors which make beauty, there is a one or a oneness. And all of these stanzas are about finding that one which we are. As long as we are somehow divided and have a consciousness of the one that is here and yet sees that, there's this which I am and then there's that. As long as we are divided in that way, we are not truly living in the one. This is the ray of harmony, beauty, and art. And dissonance, although part of the expression, has definitely to be a passing part. I mean, things get a little bit dull in music when there is no dissonance, because there is the pleasure, aesthetic pleasure, of the resolution of dissonance into harmony. So that is called for here. Let dissonance give place to harmony, and from the center of the hidden light, let's say the soul center, or even that which is found at the center of the soul, which is a projection of the monad. See, if we look at this, we see that straight down from the will aspect comes that projection of being and its particular type of consciousness into the higher mental plane. See that red line that goes straight down? And also, interestingly, it's not a dotted line. Maybe it doesn't have to be made or created. Maybe it's, you know, already there, definitely. And the dotted lines talk about that which has to be somehow created over time. Let dissonance give place to harmony, and from the center of the hidden light. You know, there's all this thing about inner, hidden, and we have to participate, hidden. We have to participate in this hidden light. It is our point of vantage point. Okay. From the center of the hidden light, let the soul speak. And of course, it will speak with knowledge, because knowledge is the faculty of the soul, will of the spirit, knowledge of the soul. And this is interesting. Let the word roll forth. I guess we could say, when we think of a rolling tone, there is a particular sonority here in this rolling word of power. Beauty and glory veil me not. I, the one, I suppose, I, the one, stand revealed. I am. So always we deal with veils. Oopsie. So always there are veils. For the third ray, the third ray, the veil is activity. For the fourth ray, the veil is beauty. Maybe it's not quite so easy to say what it is for the second ray. What can we say that veil will be? Let's take a look here. Heart of love, then from the point of sentient life, that the soul realize the consciousness of God. Well, I would say the veil is attachment. For the second ray, the veil is attachment to the to some of the many related items in the great unity. And maybe, I'll just say, for the first ray, the veil is power. In other words, if you can manage the expression of your will in the midst of all you perceive, you will not be inclined to look for the one which you are. In other words, if things are too easy, if you can make your way forward, if you can forge ahead, you're not so inclined to look for that totally unitive, homogenizing factor. So anyway, this is all about, all of this is all of these stanzas deal with unveiling and discovering the one. Well, actually, I shouldn't put it that way. One which one is. This one should be, and I probably haven't done it, should be more reserved for the one and only. Outside the universe altogether. And that would be the absoluteness. But you really can't separate anything from absoluteness. Everything is a veil, actually, upon absoluteness. So I've always found, you know, with fourth-ray stanzas that they demand an exercise of the intuition and are not exactly straightforward as we try to understand them. Okay. Fifth ray stanza. Interesting, the electricity. Let the three forms of electric energy pass upward to the place of power. And we might say, you know, personality, soul, and will. I suppose, you know, that which is higher than the soul. Let the forces of the head and heart and all the nether aspects blend, integration. Then let the soul, you see, the soul look out. You know, the soul's always looking out. We are trying to see what really is the soul perspective, and what kind of knowledge can be gathered from that perspective. Then let the soul look out upon an inner world of light divine. The fifth ray is the fifth ray, Lord, is of the most intense light. And wherever the fifth ray is found, great light can be revealed. Great light can be revealed through the fifth ray. Let the word triumphant go forth. And this is, this word suggests the first ray into which the fifth ray resolves. I mastered energy through knowledge, for I am energy itself. The master and the mastered are but one. Okay. All of them are profound. You have to admit and require much meditation from us. Let's see, I did. So let's read it again and see what we get. That the three forms of energy, electric, and interesting, you know, electric fire is a first ray energy, but all energies are electric. Pass upward to the place of power. So basically, I would say, we have the forms. We have fire by friction, solar fire, okay, solar fire, and electric fire. Let them pass upward to the place of power. Now that's got to be, finally, the monad. The soul is a kind of place of power relative to what we have as a personality, but the true place of power is the spirit within us. Pass upward to the place of power, let the forces of the head and heart. This is really important. Now think of Venus, right? A fifth ray soul. Think of Venus, a fifth ray soul. Fifth ray soul blending the head and the heart. Okay, friends, I was interrupted. I'm sorry. And a little discontinuity here. But I think we were, you know, talking about the idea that Venus blends the head and the heart, and it's also the fifth ray soul planet, and it is a great factor for integration. Therefore, let the forces of the head and heart and all of the lower chakras as well blend. And then again, we're dealing with the soul perspective. And then let the soul look out. You know, this is very much like the first ray. Let the soul look out upon a world destroyed, it says. But let the soul look out upon an inner world of light divine. It's the most intense. The fifth ray lord is the most intense of all the ray lords in terms of light. Second ray soul, the most intense of the souls in terms of light. Okay. And let the word triumphant go forth. That suggests the first ray. And the fifth ray souls, as you know, resolve into the first ray. I mastered energy, for I am energy itself. Maybe no ray looks upon things more specifically as energy than does the fifth ray. And of course, you know, the blending is there. This is the ray of great objectivity, so it has difficulty overcoming cleavages between the subject and the object, but in this particular case it does, as every ray type will overcome the cleavage. You know, fifth ray rules the law of cleavages, but here it will be overcome. The master and the mastered are, after all, but one. So let me read this. You know, I'm just amazed at how profound these sections from the old commentary are, and how, if we really put them to use in our meditative life, using them accordingly, according to the soul ray we have, and maybe, you know, partially according to the monadic ray that we begin to intuit, they would be of great value. I mastered energy. That's exactly what the fifth ray type has to do. Just think of that. I was thinking the other day, how is it that these rockets are going into space and they can calculate exactly the trajectory, the orbits, even, you know, even going to other planets and returning? You know, what a tremendous mathematics that is. And DK has sometimes called the fifth ray the mathematical type. I mastered energy, for I am energy itself. Interestingly, DK called his esoteric astrology book the most occult of his books because it dealt entirely with energy. The master and the mastered are but one. So I am mastering aspects of my own nature, self-mastery, and of course, great understanding of energy can enter into the fifth, the way the fifth ray type does, get its personality in order, and the link between soul and personality made correct. It understands the scientific ways of doing this, and of course, all of its investigations into matter, interestingly enough, will reveal a great light. Now, we're not to suppose that the fifth ray type will only concentrate upon the world of dense materiality. You can use the fifth ray in relation to all the different planes. You can even, once subject and object are unified, you can even continue to use the fifth ray, obviously, because there are great beings that are animated by the fifth ray, and they certainly know and understand the unity of subject and object, but they continue to use the fifth ray. So if we could only look at all things and understand them in terms of energy, this would be a gift from the fifth ray. I'm going to read this, you know, by itself, refraining from my usual habit of interjecting commentary. Let the three forms of energy electric pass upward to the place of power. I'm sorry, I've got to say something. You do see, don't you, how very much connected with the first ray this is. Let the forces come together, let them mount to the high place. See, very similar. And from that lofty eminence, let the soul look out upon a world destroyed. But let the soul look out. In other words, finally, we have to act as one who is the soul and has the perspective of the soul. Oh, I guess I just have to read it and stop commenting, don't I, right? Okay. Let the three forms of energy electric pass upward to the place of power. Let the forces of the head and heart, and all the nether aspects blend. Then let the soul look out upon an inner world of light divine. Let the word let the word triumphant go forth. I mastered energy, for I am energy itself, the master and the mastered of it, one. And, you know, who's speaking that word? It's the soul that's speaking that word. And really, the soul in incarnation realizes that it can speak as the soul on its own plane. I've often thought, you know, what is this soul on its own plane? Well, we usually talk about the higher mental plane, but it's a blend of the consciousness projected by the solar angel, who is usually considered to be a Buddhic being at the very least. So it sends a fragment, a stream into the causal body, and the monad goes forth in attenuation, and those two are present, the monad, the human consciousness, the ultimate monadic consciousness, attenuated, and that which is projected by the solar angel, and somehow they are blending and merging. I mean, consciousness is one of those sort of mercurial fluids, you know. It can merge. Consciousnesses can merge within the causal body, and that is here what is happening. Anyway, you know, I can't give everything, nor do I understand everything, but let's just say if we ponder according to our soul ray type, we can act as we should, act as we must, in order to achieve the perspective of great detachment, and yet as oneness, all that is perceived and the perceiver are one. And this, we are getting the methods, we're being presented with the methods of doing that. To will, to know, to dare, to be silent. When we can express that particular lineup, then we are converging on oneness. Maybe, you know, around the third degree, it becomes somewhere between the second and third degree, it starts to become important. And by the fifth degree, it's achieved as isolated unity. I sometimes say, you know, isolated unity, it's a very evocative phrase. I sometimes wonder about isolated oneness. Is it even more than isolated unity? To perceive the unity of all things is good and is necessary, and is it the same as perceiving the oneness of all things? I'm saying these things in connection with a ray that tends really to divide things up into little parts and pieces. You know, there's no ray that sees more fragments than the fifth ray. It's really the jigsaw puzzle ray, but when it all comes together, it's very intricate and articulated at the same time. The unity, articulated unity, the fifth ray really makes its contribution to articulated unity. I want to say that the fifth ray makes its most necessary contribution to articulated unity. Okay, sixth ray. Let all desire cease. Wonder if that's ever possible, but you know, desire in the normal sense anyway. Because even the great logo, I have desire. It's a much higher thing. Let aspiration end. Aspiration for the usual things. Because aspiration is not just an emotional attitude, it's a scientific method of elevation, something like that, the Tibetan speaks. The search is over. The search, what can we say, for our own higher nature and its perspectives. That the soul realize, and that's us, we are the realizer put a capital there, let the soul realize that it has reached the goal, however temporary, and from that gateway to eternal life and cosmic peace, far beyond the limitations of what we usually call soul. Let the word sound. Every time that word sounds, it's not necessarily from another source which is not us. I am the seeker and the sought. I rest. I find myself often quoting that one or thinking about it, because there is a great quest to find something. And I am the seeker and the sought. At last, I rest. Okay. All right, let's see if I can get rid of this, because what happens there is no color. And then, okay. Let all desires cease, let aspiration end. The search is over. You know, I think we can see, how Sagittarian this is, the sign, which conveys the most six ray. Oh, come at this time. Let aspiration end. Let the soul, which we are, let the soul realize that it has reached the goal, however temporary that goal may be, and from that gateway to eternal life and cosmic peace, which is or can be experienced by the monad, from that gateway to eternal life and cosmic peace, let the word sound. Now, who's sounding the word? You know, who is sounding the word? And let it be that we discover that it is a higher identity of our own, which is sounding the word. Let the word sound. I am the seeker and the sought. I rest. Okay. A form of identification takes over. I am the seeker and the sought. I rest. My rest is temporary, but necessary. Master M gives us the joys of endless labor. So, in cosmos, all rest is but temporary. You know, planetary logos is not resting. The solar logos is not resting. It's a temporary rest in terms of having found the one. The one is found, and the unity between the subject and the object, between the seeker and the sought. That is found. You know how it is, the six-ray type is always longing for some great thing. We can call it God, or, you know, some great being, some great state, some heaven, something, you know, always the questing, restless seeker, restless seeking moved over. And then we find out that, what was it, St. Francis? What we're looking for is what's doing the looking? Something like that. That's very interesting. The idea that we're actually looking for the very thing that is the seeker. So really, we are seeking seeker. And finally, we realize that we are the very thing that is being sought. Well, maybe this is quite familiar for many of us because, you know, a lot of us are on the second ray one way or another. Maybe not necessarily essentially from the monadic point of view, but at least on the second ray from the soul point of view. And although the fourth ray can morph into the second ray, the sixth ray definitely carries, sixth ray soul carries a lot of seekers onto the second ray. Let all desire cease, let aspiration end, the search is over. Let the soul realize that it has reached its goal, and from that gateway to eternal life and cosmic peace, let the word sound. I am the seeker and the sought. I rest. Gateway, gateway. What is the gateway? It's a point of departure into what will become full monadic life. Eventually, on the way of higher evolution. Yeah. Well, you know, we have to ponder. Quite extraordinary how to be led into the unity, at least, and into the one. I think that when we're being led into the one, we negate, at least for a while, the articulation of all things. In the unity, we see that all things are related in a great oneness, but our perception is still taking in those things that are related. But when we're finding the one, we negate the preoccupation with the things that are related and simply focus on the one which subsumes everything. So our attention is reduced when it comes to the things to be related and is focusing on that in which they all find their ultimate identity. Well, I think, you know, the first soul of initiation, third initiation, begins to really give us that sense of what the not only isolated unity may be, but if we remove our attention from those factors which are being unified into the unifying factor, which is the one, then we have isolated oneness, where we isolate the one. Well, you can see how rich this material is, and how it really gives us a way through, a way to the very things that have to be achieved. I mean, you know, we can learn from all seven of these, But there's probably one of them, according to our soul ray, I guess, and according to the knowledge we gain while perceiving as a soul upon our soul ray, probably one of them is the best for us to use. Seventh ray. So, let the builders cease their work. The temple is completed. Let the soul enter into its heritage, and from the holy place command all work to end. Then in the silence subsequent, we always find the one in silence. Then in the silence subsequent, let him chant forth the word. The creative work is over. I, the creator, am. Naught else remains but me. The builders, the seventh ray is the seventh ray is the most devically related ray. Devically, maybe there's not any such word, but anyway, you'll know what I mean. Let the builders cease their work. There are the outer builders, there are the inner builders, and they are dealt with in specific ways in these white magical rules. Finally, the outer builders are building the vehicles, and the inner builders are building the apparatus, inner apparatus. But the builders cease their work. The temple is completed. Now, this is King Solomon's temple. KST. Oh, let's see. I really ought collapse the ribbon. KST. KST. And KST. Aha, I see the problem. That is the problem. And in order to do this correctly, I have to KST. We'll be trying to get the right capitalization there. Difficult. And I'm going to simply call it King Solomon's Temple. The causal body, right? So the temple is completed. King Solomon's temple is completed. Pretty much at the fourth initiation. Really just before. So we can kind of see how far these rules really extend, these words of power, these sections of the old commentary. Every once in a while gives you a hint, how far can you take this? The temple is completed. Well, the building of the causal body takes a long time. So, the building of the causal body takes a long time. But eventually, the builders, building really is completed. The temple is completed. let the soul enter into its heritage, and we might say the completed temple is its heritage, and also that which lies beyond through the destruction of that temple. To will, to know, to dare, to be silent. And from the holy place, command all work to end, because... Okay, do I want to do that? Yes. Command all work to end. Now is the time for destruction. It's not time to build anymore. Right now, command all work to end. Then in the silence, which is always necessary, we saw reverberating through the silence in the second ray work, interestingly, the two building rays, and we saw a lot of silence coming in the third ray. Did we see it in the fourth ray as well? Let's see here. Maybe not so much there, but we saw quiescence coming into the third ray, did we not? The point quiescent. And reverberation through the silence. Let the word go forth, reverberating through the silence. Silence is somehow, I think I just want to put that down, you know. Then in the silence subsequent, let's just say silence is unitive and eventually one making. I don't know how else to say it at the moment. Silence restores the one. So, or the perception of the one, or the realization that one is the one. The creative work is over. I, the creator, am. I've been all along as a projection of my own monad. I've been the creator. And when it's all over, there's no more object. No more object exists. We might say, I am even the creation which I have made. Or even become. The creative work is over. I, the creator, am. Naught else remains but me. We're not rejecting the presence of that which has been created. We're simply saying that really all that I've created is myself. There has been more a becoming than a creation. You know, the whole idea that God created this and God created that, I think it's much truer and better under the laws and rules of emanation to say that God became this and God became that. So in a funny kind of way, let's just say that we became all we appear to be. We did not so much create it as become it. And that would bring about a fundamental change in the way people perceive the religious methods, the religious understanding. It would lead to a kind of a philosophical pantheism, every, you know, God in everything and as everything. And it would end that terrible subject-object division as applied to the field of religion, which has made God transcendent so unapproachable that artificial means are needed to approach, to get there, artificial means. And the priest then enters, sometimes not so much as a divine intermediary, as a self-serving obstruction to the exercise of the individual's real powers. I mean, each of us has to bridge into what we are. We don't need a priest unless we ourselves become our own priest in, as a soul reapplying for the union which already exists. So, you know, there was a lot to the Protestant Reformation because great abuse had entered the Catholic Church, and all these priestly intermediaries were overvalued and robbed the individual of the opportunity to really not only make a bridge to his higher self, but to become the bridge to that higher self, which ultimately is God. See, we've got a world that's all fragmentary and divided, and we are the victims of the kind of divisive perception, which is common to the mind, which fails to understand the deeper unity. And we have to overcome this divisiveness, which normal perception seems to impress upon our limited understanding. We have to become the unity that we are and become, re-become, we already are that, but re-become in full consciousness the oneness we have always been. But that takes work, a lot of work, in a subtle sort of way. Let me just read this. Let the builders cease their work. The temple is completed. Let the soul enter into its heritage and from the holy place command all work to end. Then in the silence subsequent, let him chant forth the word, I am, the creative work is over, I the creator am, naught else remains but me. And you know this word chant, it is very much like enchant. The sound is used. Okay, you get out of there. Goodness. Sorry. So we will say that sound is used for magical purposes. Now, you know, I'm living here in Finland. It's a country with a huge seventh ray and the a history of incantation. I think let's look at the incantation idea. Incantation is involved, enchanting. The Finnish magicians were called upon to accompany the boats, the ships of others, because they had the power to incant and to enchant. And in the power of incantation was theirs, and they could calm the weather and do all kinds of things. The hero of you know Gandalf, he's kind of in the Lord of the Rings, he's kind of modeled on the Finnish Väinämöinen. He's called he's sort of the head deva and the national deva, we might almost say. There are other great archetypes, but Väinämöinen is foremost, and he sings. He incants. He sings things into existence. So, we have a Vishnu character there in a way that can sing things into existence. We have the power of the word and the musical tone together, used for magical purposes. This we're going to have a lot of that during the seventh ray age, and maybe a lot of these mantrams will be recovered. It's very interesting. We had a individual here. I guess he was probably passed on now, but he was 95, very, very old. He had memorized the entirety of Kalevalan from the Kalevala, Kalevalan chants from 15,000 years ago. So he was a musical treasure, and they were trying to record him, having him sing these original magical incantations, 15,000 years old, something like that. So this blend of music and magic and the word will be found very much in the New Age, which is accompanied by a seventh ray cycle while the Aquarian energy is manifesting. It's not always that way. Any one of the rays could accompany, let us say, an Aquarian cycle or any other cycle of 2100 plus years, but at this time it's the Aquarian cycle, using the seventh ray. The creative work is over. I, the creator, am. Naught else remains but me. And for the second ray, there's some similarities there. Naught is but me. We just have to learn that that which we create, we have become. I think I'll put that down. Somehow on a very deep level, we are that which we create. Let's see. We are that which we create. We have become our creations. Naught is but me. Look around you, and even if we didn't create it with our own hands or minds or whatever, it has been created by a mind, and we are that. There's nothing we can perceive which is devoid of isness. There is no negation. Spinoza definitely knew what he was talking about there. He negated negation in his foundational principles. So if we can perceive it, it has isness, it is isness, and we are isness. Isness is being. We are being. We are whatever we perceive, and the subject-object distinction, though practically useful, is not what we are understanding as a deeper truth. All right. Now, I'm going to try to go on just a little bit. I'm pretty close to the 1 hour mark, but I'd like to extend this if I can, because it does, ultimately save time. So we're almost really at, the 1 hour mark. Okay, I'll put that in. 1 hour mark now. Maybe 30 seconds left. The vital forces which are simply passing through the outer sheath of the constantly moving ether of space are of many kinds. The vital forces which are simply the passing through the outer sheath of the constantly moving ethers of space are of many kinds. So, many kinds of of vital forces. Many kinds of vital forces. And the outer sheath, in this case, dense physical vehicle, but it would be better if that was dense physical vehicle. One of the concepts lying back of the astrological theories, he elaborates this quite a bit in the esoteric astrology book. One of the concepts lying back of the astrological theories is that the etheric body of any form constitutes part of the etheric body of the solar system and is therefore the medium for the transmission of solar energies, of planetary forces, and of extrasolar or cosmic impulses, esoterically called breaths. Well, that's a good one, huh? Okay. So basically, here is an occult naming of high and subtle energy flows as breaths. One of the concepts lying back of the astrological theories is that the etheric body of any form constitutes part of the etheric body of the solar system. And, you know, of course, we could extend that, couldn't we? There's only one etheric body of all universal space, and is therefore the medium for the transmission of solar energies. Here is a list of potentials of the etheric body, what the etheric body can actually carry. The medium for the transmission of solar energies. Now, to an extent, we have that with prana, but there are others and higher, of course. Of planetary forces, of extrasolar or cosmic impulses, esoterically called breaths. These forces and energies of the cosmic rays are constantly circulating and following definite paths through the ether of space and all its parts. So, paths of circulation are distinct and determined. And are therefore constantly passing through the etheric bodies of every exoteric form, though in many cases not registered. Of too high a vibration, we would say, and maybe some are too low and cannot be registered. So cosmic rays, does he mean those that are tangible, or rays that are even more subtle? Let's just say there are many kinds of subtlety here. Are constantly circulating and following definite paths through the ether. Isn't that interesting? According to their nature, right? Following definite paths through the ether of space in all parts, and are therefore constantly passing through the etheric bodies of every exoteric form. And let's just say that spiritual development has much to do with becoming sensitive enough to register these. This is a basic truth and must be carefully borne in mind, for its implications are many and varied. Well, as we grow in our spirituality, our cognizance, our sentiency, our sensitivity regarding these transmissions also increases, and a much more complex world from the energy perspective arises. But all lead back to the idea of unity and of the oneness of all manifestation, only to be known and realized on the subjective side. So, without, whoopsie, I'm glad I can restore that. Without the proper type of subjective perception, the outer PERCP outer view of life will not reveal the unity or the oneness. So let's just say subjective development is needed if the unity or oneness is to be revealed. Anyway, there's a great complexity and order, it looks like, regarding the sources, the variety, the methods of circulation of subtle energies. There's a tremendous intricacy in all this. At the same time, it leads back to the idea, which must be perceived, of the unity and of the oneness. Notice how, in this particular case, he does not capitalize the unity, he does capitalize the oneness. Or maybe this is the editor, I don't know. Maybe this was Alice Bailey consulted with him on some of these capitalizations, or just made the decision herself, or maybe the editor of what she took down made the decision. But unity and oneness are not, don't have the same capitalization. So basically, the first idea is there are, let's just say, many, many kinds of vital forces. Okay. Now the second point, the second basic idea. Is that the response of the etheric vehicle of all forms and its capacity to appropriate, to utilize, and to transmit are dependent upon the condition of the centers of the chakras, as they are called in the East. Well, appropriation, you know, recognition, appropriation, utilization, we've got to be able to register these things in order to appropriate and use them. So this is the factor of chakric development. These include not only the well-known seven major centers, but numbers of lesser vortices of force, and maybe greater also. As there are certain esoteric centers which are not mentioned, let's say involved in the head area, they're not usually mentioned along with the usual seven. These include not only the well-known seven major centers of force, but numbers of lesser vortices of force, as yet unnamed and unknown in the Occident, implication, they are known in the Orient. It is dependent also upon the quality of the etheric vehicle. So condition of the centers, that's one. That's one factor which determines the etheric body's response, and then the quality of the etheric vehicle will determine how it responds. It is dependent also upon the quality of the etheric vehicle, upon its aliveness, and also upon the interlacing network in which the centers have their place, and which in its entirety is called the web or the golden bowl. So what do we have here? The idea, quality, aliveness, and interconnectedness. Quality, aliveness, and degree of interconnectedness. If this is clear of impediments, well, you know, what do we call that? Dross. If this, if the interconnected channels are clear of impediments and of sediment, we say unprocessed. And if its channels are not clogged, and this, you know, this may relate to thought, emotion, and diet, then the circulating rays, energies, and forces can find an easy medium and can circulate unimpeded through the, throughout the etheric body. But I'm sure that, you know, given the condition of humanity today, has much of the impediment, the clogging, the sediment, the inhibitions, inhibiting factors. Well, that's all part of the seventh ray cleanup that we're going to be, you know, participating in during the coming centuries, when that ray really reveals how the etheric body can best be maintained, and then the health of the physical body will be improved. I think, you know, one of the reasons for death, the death of forms, is so that we do not perpetuate inadequacy. When it's not possible to clean up and work the improvement of a vehicle, then it has to disappear. For someone like the Master R, he knows exactly what he's doing and how to rejuvenate the vehicle. But death, let's just say, death of a form is preferable to the inability to rejuvenate that form. Master R can rejuvenate. And I'm sure that belongs to the abilities of different masters as well, but, you know, he's a seventh ray master and a third ray master in a certain sense. He knows exactly, from the point of view of knowledge, how to do that. And we don't know those things yet. We're searching for that kind of immortality, but the problem with the immortality that we're searching for is it's largely physical and would perpetuate inhibition. So maybe better to die, you know, and start fresh. So if this is clear of impediments and of sediment, and if the channels are not clogged, then the circulating rays, energies, and forces can find an easy medium and can circulate unimpeded throughout the etheric body. And let's just say, oh, good Lord, let's just say maybe these forces and these energies and forces will also be recognized. Okay. Because so much passes through that is not yet recognized by us. They can then utilize those centers which are responsive to their vibrations and can be passed on and through to forms in other or the same kingdoms of nature. So the higher forces utilize the prepared chakras and web of the human being in this case. So there we are always, you know, we are instruments, and higher forces know how to utilize the instrument if it can be utilized. And here lies the secret of all scientific and occult healing, you know. Forces passing through and those very forces being transmitted to others. Okay, let's just say forces and energies passing through and being deliberately transmitted. Healers are experimenting with the etheric body, and yet little real knowledge is theirs. So more was given by Master DK later. You know, let's just say, thus the reason for a book like Esoteric Healing. They know little or nothing of the centers in their own body, through which the magnetic or other currents must flow. And let us say, from the soul and from on high in general. They are unaware of the condition of the etheric centers of those they seek to heal and of the nature of the forces they wish to employ. Well, lots of blindness here. But maybe, you know, still because the will is good, something can happen. All they can do is to discipline their lives and so control their appetites that they build a clean body and provide clear channels for the passage of forces from and through themselves to others. Well, Master DK is going to be one of those externalizing masters. And will teach esoteric healing. So we have learned, among other things, you know, his ashram is very much involved in preparing students, training students with the many things they have to do to whip themselves into shape, as he said, and be ready for the next initiation. So this little section here that we dealt with, second basic idea is, let's call it, how to achieve the responsive etheric body, responsive to the higher energies and forces. Okay, I'm going to make that something. Energies and forces. EAFS. Okay. Now, so we had the first one was about, what was it about? Many kinds of vital forces. All right. That's the first sort of post paragraph here, post the old commentary section, many kind of vital forces, And the second was the let's see what. Let's see if I can find that. Sorry. So here's many kinds of vital forces. And I'm sorry, I can't find the. Ah, here it is, the second here. Second basic idea, response of the etheric vehicle. How to achieve a responsive etheric body. That's the second one. And now let's see what is the third. What is the third? The third concept to be noted is that forms are as yet primarily responsive to the forces which reach them from other forms on the planet, to the seven basic types of energy emanating from the seven planets, and also to the life-giving solar ray. Well, that's, yeah. Forms are as yet responsive. The sources to which today most forms respond. The third concept to be noted is that forms are as yet primarily responsive to the forces which reach them from other forms on the planet. So that's kind of a. To the seven basic types of energies emanating from the seven planets. I guess that's why we are particularly responsive to planetary force, maybe even more than zodiacal energy. And then also to the life-giving solar ray. And that can be via prana, but also via other factors which emanate from the sun. All forms in all the four kingdoms, the lower kingdoms, respond to these many forces from the forms, to these seven energies, and to the one ray. Okay. So we're learning what we have to, what is given to us to deal with. So these are the forms, forces, and the ray to which we respond. Forms and various forces, ray and astrological forces. And the one ray. The human family are responsive also to other energies and to solar rays, all, however, colored by the force generated within the solar ring pass knot. So we can say the solar ring pass knot is our main conditioning sphere. Well, even the zodiacal energies which come into the solar ring pass knot are conditioned by that which is found within the solar system. But forms and seven forces and one ray. So basically, like this. Many forms, seven forces of the rays, and the one ray are the main conditioning factors of for all kingdoms of nature. Man has additional response possibilities. Additional. Okay. Many forms, seven forces of the raised. And how did he put it? This is the second idea. Just trying to keep all this straight, you know, so that it can find a place, a clear place within the mind. And the third is that forms, seven basic types of energy from the planetary forces, planetary distributors, and then one life-giving solar rays. So many forms, seven forces, let's just say, from the planets, and the one ray. These are the factors to which we predominantly respond. Let's think about that. Just think about your life, you know. Many forms, seven major planetary forces, and I assume the other, maybe non-sacred planetary forces are subsumed under the sacred ones, and the one solar ray. These are providing the main conditioning factors. And maybe for man, there are some other factors